Night has come to the city of Augustus, Illinois. At the Augustus Country Club in the dining area, Diana is talking on her cell phone as Elaine enters the dining area and begins to greet fellow country club members. Elaine then walks over to Diana and sits across from her.
Yes, I understand that Morgan forgot to schedule the fundraiser, but this is an event of the year for Augustus. Simply put, if he does not get a move on, then you can tell that sorry excuse for a party planner that I'll gladly move him to the unemployment line. Thank you for understanding. I have to go. Bye now. Sorry about that. I just had to clear up some miscommunication on my end of things.
As the two ladies begin to converse, a waiter fills up their crystal water glasses.
Speaking of the fundraiser, I noticed that no one has picked up the advertising for the event. This does surprise me. I mean, your son is the advertising game, much like my family. I just don't want your women's club to miss out on the opportunity that is right in front of you. Same goes for Colin. This event is so huge that it could easily further his whole career.
Oh, well, that's sweet of you to say, Diana. But my son's plate is just so full right now, if I'm being honest. He has so many clients already. Considering how popular his firm has become, and, well, he's just got some news today that forced him to take the rest of the day off.
Oh, dear. I hope everything's all right. Always nice to have a mother back her child up when it comes to their well-being. Back to the topic at hand, however. The person I was on the phone with was Morgan Norton, who, as I said, needs to get things together. The only thing she does know is that nobody has gotten the word out about the fundraiser. And since you informed me that your son's business plate is rather full, I would like for you to give me permission to handle the advertising for the fundraiser. It would mean the world to me, Elaine.
While I certainly can understand why I should give you permission, since you already seem to be on top of things, and you could further prove yourself to the rest of the women in the group. It's your time to shine, Diana.
Thank you, Elaine. My family always likes to jump in front of things. I won't disappoint you.
Elaine flashes a rather graceful smile as Stuart suddenly walks up to the two women.
I thought I would find you here, sweetheart.
I thought I told you that I would be meeting with some of the ladies from the country club. Elaine, you remember my husband, right?
Oh, certainly. Hello, Stuart.
Elaine, it's so good to see you and those pretty eyes again. And I must say that that diamond necklace around your neck truly does bring out the sparkle in your eyes.
Well, you're quite the charmer.
Stuart looks for Diana's reaction as she cuts her eyes at him. Elaine then stands from the table.
I have other things to attend to. Stuart, it was a pleasure to see you again. And Diana, I will be interested to see exactly what you come up with.
Elaine walks off as Stuart takes a seat across from his wife, who still has a frowning expression on her face.
What's the matter, darling? All's fair in love and divorce.
At Memorial Hospital, Olivia is walking with Beau down a hallway to Donovan's hospital room.
He's been showing some signs of movement, but he still has not woken up yet.
But coma patients can sometimes hear those around them, right?
Absolutely. Hearing people around them does tend to disorient coma patients from time to time when they eventually do wake up. Without seeing the visuals of someone speaking, it's hard for an initially non-seeing impaired patient to match voices and faces. So I will tell you that when a patient does come out of a comatose state, their memory could be slightly jumbled.
I see. I'll try to keep it as brief and simple as I can, but Mr. Aldridge must know something about who shot him and why.
And here we are.
Beau and Olivia walk into the room as Beau gestures for Olivia to walk in first.
There he is. It always baffles my mind that creeps like him look so peaceful when they are asleep.
Mr. Aldrich, it's Nurse Bookman. I'm here with Detective Reynolds. He wants to ask you some questions about your shooting. I know you've been showing signs of movement. If you can hear me, I would like to develop a yes and no system with your hands. Can you squeeze my hand right now?
Olivia grabs Donovan's hand. Donovan then squeezes her hand rather tightly. And just as Detective Beau Reynolds takes a step forward and is about to ask him a yes or no question, Donovan, who has been lying comatose for months, suddenly opens his eyes.
At the Harper Mansion in the living room, Melanie is sitting on the couch, talking on her cell phone.
Colin, it's me. Look, I hope you're okay. And I know you probably don't want to hear from me, but I was just worried about you, considering that video that Natasha sent you. Look, Connor.
His name is Colin!
Melanie looks over at Caitlin, who is standing in the entryway to the living room.
I better let you go. Bye.
Melanie then hangs up from leaving the voicemail as she stands from the couch. Caitlin then enters the room fully.
Caitlin. Hi.
Hello, Melanie.
It's been a long time. How have you been these days?
I've been doing... okay. That is, if you consider the okay part of my life to be the fact that my business partner dropped out of our venture. Said business partner was, of course, Sky Parkhurst. You remember her. And Lakin now lives in Spain and still wants nothing to do with me. My mom is investigating my dad's whereabouts, you know, who was in prison. And as no one has been able to locate him in almost a year. Oh, and then there's you. Once again, you walk into our lives as though nothing bad has ever happened.
Caitlin, we haven't talked since the night of the reunion. You haven't called, text, written an email, nothing.
A phone works both ways, you know. You haven't either.
I thought it'd be best to give you some space.
My brother told me that you were here, and I knew this day was coming. I did. There's so much I have to say to you, but I don't know how to put my thoughts into words.
Why don't you sit down? I can have Gwendolyn bring us some tea.
I don't want any tea. I don't want to sit down with you. I was always on your side. I was the one who gave you the benefit of the doubt when no one else would. When you walked back into Mom's life after 25 years, I begged her to hear you out. Little did I know, the only reason you came back here was so you and your crack-addicted ex-lover could blow up all of our lives.
Caitlin, that's not why I came back here. I missed all of you. And I was beginning to feel sick even at that point. I couldn't have predicted the future. I didn't know that Steven was going to come here. I didn't know we were going to fall back in love with one another. And throughout all of those months, I urged him to tell Connor the truth.
Colin! His name is Colin! He is my brother!
Of course he is. I would never want to take that away from you.
Melanie, you were going to let him go on his honeymoon to Greece with that letter. You were just going to reveal all to him, like it didn't even matter. You were in Germany at the time, which would have led up to deal with the fallout by ourselves. And Emma not died instead.
I understand that now. Oh, God, I understand that wherever I go, I hurt people. I am so sorry for all the pain I've caused. I'm just asking for a second chance, Caitlin. Please.
I don't know. I just don't know.
At the magnifier in Isaac's office, Isaac is sitting behind his desk, looking over a timeline of Donovan's shooting.
I didn't shoot you, you bastard. Nonetheless, I bet you're enjoying this. All you're doing is lying peacefully in that coma, as all of us fried for a crime that should have been committed the second you walked into this town. Who shot you, Donovan? Who really pulled the trigger that night?
At the Bay Ridge Hotel in Gregory Suite.
Rhonda, hi. It's so good to see you. Come on in, come on in.
Oh, Gregory, I'm so sorry for just dropping by like this. But you know, I've been driving around and around this town and it just felt like I was completely without direction and there wasn't even a meeting going on. So I came here just hoping and praying that you wouldn't be busy.
Rhonda, it's perfect timing, actually. I just finished going through an inventory report and catching up with my son. And I was about to unwind by watching a movie on the Classics channel, but seeing you is much better than that.
Well, I'm glad I could make somebody feel better. I seem to be at a loss to do that for my son.
Why would you say that?
Because I made his day an absolute train wreck. Gregory, I want to talk to you about this, but first I have to admit that I haven't been completely honest with you. I really like you, Gregory, and I want to be truthful with you. You're a great friend, and I hope potentially more.
I hope so too, Rhonda. And I'm honored that you feel you can be honest with me. But first, just take a seat. Now, you mentioned your son. Is he okay? Is Antoine all right?
Well, I think he'll be fine. But I know what I told him is most certainly weighing on him. Gregory, a few days ago, I ran into somebody who made me remember the mess I used to be. You know, I once was this very sad woman who took pride in wheeling and dealing at any cost and at any chance I got. But somehow, in the middle of all of that, I managed to make a promise to myself. I promised myself that one day I would be the best version of myself that I could be. You know, one where I could stop pretending that everything was fine. One where I could actually deal with my problems. But by the time I had Antoine, I realized that keeping true to that promise was really incredibly difficult. So I just continued to make even more dumb decisions.
Okay. What kind of dumb decisions? I mean, I know I've made a few.
But I doubt you have the lasting memories of those decisions like I do. I am reminded of the choices I've made and the memories I have of them day in and day out. And when I think on those long-lasting memories, there's nothing I want more than to walk into a casino. There's nothing I want more than a nice line.
A nice line? What do you mean?
It's the line that gets you to feel so high and mighty. The line that makes all of your pain go away. So you just keep pulling that lever on the slots, all in hopes of getting another dollar to inhale another nice line.
It's okay. Rhonda, it's okay. It's okay. I get it.
At Memorial Hospital in Donovan's hospital room, Donovan is lying with his eyes wide open, gasping for air. Donovan can't seem to contain himself any longer, as suddenly he begins to seize. Olivia then pushes Bo out of the way, lowers Donovan's bed, and turns him on his side. Christopher and Callum then rush into the room.
Nurse Bookman, what the hell is going on here?
Aldridge woke up just as Reynolds was about to talk to him. Patient's blood pressure is 145 over 90.
He's going to have a stroke if we don't get this down. Nurse Bookman, I need for you to give him in a vasodilator state before he hits 165 and has a severe stroke.
Nitroprusside or nitroglycerin?
Callum looks up at Olivia as Christopher tries to help her get Donovan on his side.
Nitroprusside would be quicker of the two. It would stabilize him and decrease his pressure by 25%.
You heard Dr. Marshall, Nurse Bookman.
Olivia then administers the medication upon Callum's orders. Donovan's seizure begins to come to an end as his eyes slowly close. At Prodigy Nightclub in the main area, Simon is sitting at the bar drinking a whiskey sour. He then turns in his bar chair, scanning the place, as Leslie walks up to the bar. Leslie then places a drink order as she checks out the place before smiling over at Simon.
Malibu Sunset. Interesting drink choice, if I do say so myself. Aren't you Leslie Marshall?
It's a delicious drink. And do I know you or something?
Come on. Everyone knows who you are, Leslie. You're the daughter of the powerful Isaac Marshall. And you used to run the Bay Ridge Hotel. I also know that you killed the son of the lady who held you hostage in your own hotel. You're a badass.
Thanks. And I guess in this digital age, everyone really does know everyone. And for future reference, I don't like to talk about the night I killed that guy in self-defense.
Noted. So, what is Augustus Princess doing in a place like this?
Augustus's Princess? First off, I have been coming here a long time, and I will even be here for the grand reopening in just a few days. Secondly, I wouldn't call myself a princess by any stretch of the imagination. And who are you, by the way?
I'm Simon Hastings. You may know me from being a top-level executive at my family's company, the Hastings Advertising Firm.
Ah, yes. I've heard of you and your family's business ever since all of you blew into this town late last year. I think your mom is also friends with Lenore Parkhurst from college, right?
And see? You do know me as well as I know you.
Doubtful.
At the Bennett home in the living room, Jonah is sitting on the couch when Miranda enters the room and goes to him.
Hey, you.
Hi.
Why aren't you listening to the television?
The remote wasn't where it usually is, so all I could do was just sit here.
Oh, sorry about that. I'll be sure to find that soon. Anyway, I just got off the phone with Lakin. She says hi. She called to find out what was going on in this town of ours. I told her that everything was just fine for right now.
For right now? What does that mean?
Shall I repeat our discussion from earlier? Detective Reynolds said that he would find out who shot Donovan in a matter of time. And when he does, that person is sure to pay. And we both know that whomever did it had it in their best interest to get rid of Donovan for good. Jonah, we did not do this. And neither did Isaac. Donovan's shooter is still roaming free. Who knows what he'll do to people who are actually innocent?
You got a point there. But I wouldn't get too upset. I don't want to see you cry all over that pretty green blouse of yours, darling.
What did you just say to me?
I said,
Jonah, how do you know that my blouse is green?
Simple. The same way I could tell that you moved the bar cart from being by the window to it now being by the desk. I can see. I got my sight back, Miranda.
You can really see?
Yes, I can. I can see a little. I can make out certain things, and I can see that you're confused. That beautiful face. Ugh.
Oh, how long have you known that you could see, Jonah? When exactly did you get your sight back?
This morning.
And you kept this truth from me for this long? Hours have gone by.
I know that. But I wanted to wait until I reached out to the doctor. I wanted to figure some stuff out.
Okay. Okay, fine. I get it. But what happens now?
My darling, I'm glad you asked. We cannot tell anybody about this. No one else in this town can know that I can see again.
At Stephanie's home in the living room, Stephanie is standing over by the couch as she hangs up from a cell phone call. She then looks over at the door as Felicia enters the home, going to her.
Mom, where the hell have you been all day?
Oh, I was getting tired of being cooped up in this house, so I went out for a walk. And then I grabbed a bite to eat. I didn't realize we were monitoring each other's whereabouts. Tell me, when did you get home?
About half an hour ago. I just got off the phone with Isaac, if you must know. And he's doing okay.
That's good.
I guess it is. I still can't believe that Detective Reynolds thought he was the one that pulled the trigger that night.
Stephanie, don't act foolish, though. I don't think Isaac did it either, but there is a reason he's on Reynolds' suspect list. He cares for you deeply, and Donovan has done so much to you.
I guess you're right. But speaking of Donovan, Isaac told me something rather chilling. Donovan came out of his coma today. He had a quick seizure, which caused him to be knocked unconscious, but he's getting stronger.
Wow. I guess it'll only be a matter of time before he's back in that apartment with that terrible blue carpeting.
Pardon? How do you know that Donovan has blue carpeting in his apartment? Is there something you need to come clean about, Mom?
What are you implying, Stephanie? You think I was at his house the night of the shooting? I wasn't. And I only knew about the carpeting because you had told me that he had it installed as an ode to that creepy nickname he once gave you. Beautiful Blue, I think it was.
Yeah, and at one point it was a beautiful nickname. But he turned something so beautiful into something so ugly. But Mom, I do not recall telling you about what his apartment looked like.
That's probably because you told me when you were having one of your fits over him. You told me about the carpeting the day you told me about those flowers he sent you, the spray-painted black ones. Remember?
Oh, I guess I did mention it to you then. I was so out of my mind then, and with the whole hiding of my gun that you set in motion, I just had a thought for a moment. But I would like to apologize for that thought.
It's okay. Truly. I forgive you.
At the Tasty Bean Cafe in the main area, Lenore is standing behind the counter when a tired Stephen enters the establishment. He then goes over to the front counter.
Long time no see.
Hi, Lenore.
How in the world are you?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
I'm holding up okay. I do have to say that you look mighty tired. Can I get you an Americano or something?
Got anything else?
I do have this new blend of coffee straight from Peru on the house from my favorite returning customer.
If you'll excuse me, I'm going to go sit down.
Certainly.
Stephen takes a seat at a booth as he tries to clear his mind, but suddenly he begins to have flashes of the night of Donovan's shooting. He sees Donovan's lifeless body lying on the floor of his apartment. Stephen then comes out of his thoughts as he notices two police officers sitting at the next table discussing Donovan's case. A rather nervous Stephen then collects himself and exits the establishment in a hurry.
Back at the magnifier in Isaac's office, Isaac is staring out of the large floor-to-ceiling business window as he sips on a glass of scotch.
That bastard is getting stronger by the minute. He's not going to let some seizure setback put him down and out for long. He has a plan. I know he does. He's going to get back at each and every one of us. But who is he going to go after first? I guess that's the real question.
Back at Memorial Hospital on the fifth floor, Bo steps off from the elevator as he spots Christopher and Callum coming out of Donovan's hospital room.
Has there been another problem with Mr. Aldridge's care?
No, Detective Reynolds. We were just checking on him from that clonic seizure he had. We've been monitoring him closely.
His eyes are back open. Sadly, however, he's not able to talk right now.
Dr. Becker, I'm a betting man, and so I'm willing to see what I can get out of him.
Bo brushes past Christopher and Callum as he enters Donovan's hospital room. Bo pulls up the stool in the room and sits next to Donovan's bedside.
Mr. Aldridge, we finally meet face to face once again. You know, there are so many unanswered questions that only you can help me with.
Donovan glances over at Bo as Bo slowly nods upon seeing that Donovan can move his eyes.
Whomever did this must have wanted you to suffer. And from what I have been told, half of me can't blame them. I wish you could talk, but seeing as you aren't able to speak, and seeing as how tired you must be, I guess I will be going.
Bo then stands from the stool just as Donovan closes his eyes. Meanwhile, back in Donovan's hospital room, Donovan opens his eyes once again, and then, with as much strength as possible, he manages to reach for a notepad and pen on the table next to him. With all the strength he can muster, Donovan writes out, "Two shooters." Donovan then smiles and closes his eyes once again. Back at the Bay Ridge Hotel in Gregory's suite.
You know, Augustus is a very big place on the outside, yet it feels so small. I actually feel quite small even here.
You are not small, Rhonda.
I used to think that I was going to grow up and be some big hotshot diva who would be rich and famous. That was my ideal life. Then, of course, reality set in and knocked me down a few pegs. Do you remember back at that one meeting how we were talking about the moment we all knew that our past would always be a part of our future, you know, no matter what?
Yes. I remember I said that gambling and telling lies would always be a part of me because I know what it almost cost me and my family. And I will always know what it cost my ex-girlfriend Avery.
At least you can say that you fought off the demons who came after you. But for some of us, it's just harder, and harder than others believe. Even when everything in my life makes perfect sense, I can realize in a moment's notice that I am such a fool. And that nothing makes sense except for slipping back into my old habits.
You are not a fool. Rhonda, tell me something. Since this piece of your past has slipped back into your life, have you taken a drink? Have you done a drug? Have you walked into a casino?
No, Gregory, I haven't done any of those things. But I'm scared I could fall backwards at any moment, and I cannot do that to my son.
Then listen to me. Listen to me. You will not fall back. You will not fall back as long as you have Antoine. You will not fall back as long as you have the support group, and you will not fall back as long as you have me. I will not allow that to happen to somebody who is so obviously grown from that past. And I know. Oh, I know it's hard. I struggle with my past every single day, but please, please, don't even think about going back. We don't go back, Rhonda.
Rhonda gives Gregory a sympathetic look as Gregory looks deep into her eyes. He then moves towards her slowly and kisses her. She pulls back at first, unsure of what just happened. But after a moment of silence, however, Rhonda leans in and then kisses Gregory rather passionately.
This has been Forever and a Day, created by KCS Hutcherson. Co-executive producers KCS Hutcherson, Candace Mack, and Emmy Morgan. Written by KCS Hutcherson, Candace Mack, Emmy Morgan, and Eric Andras. Narrated by KCS Hutcherson. Music and sound effects provided by Fesslian Studios and Soundstripe. Theme song provided by Soundstripe. This episode starred Tony D. Head as Isaac Marshall, Renee Saran as Miranda Williams, Matthew Preston as Jonah Bennett, Christina Sullivan as Stephanie Markham, Janelle Allen as Felicia Richardson, Emmy Morgan as Olivia Bookman, Nivelle J. Lee as Callum Becker, Elizabeth Von Isser as Elaine Harper, Diana Collins as Diana Hastings, Steve Beavers as Stuart Hastings, Terry Lehmer as Lenore Parkhurst, Aaron Clark as Stephen Langenfeld, Karen Knevel as Melanie Walters, Lucretia Lyon as Caitlin Harper, Amelia Marshall as Rhonda Jeffries, Benjamin Bryant as Gregory Marshall, Kalia Davis as Leslie Marshall, Timothy Blocker Jr. as Simon Hastings, with Lance Guzman as Christopher Marshall, and Bruce Van Griffin as Beau Reynolds. This podcast was recorded under a SAG-AFTRA collective bargaining agreement. Join us next week for an all-new episode of Forever and a Day.